Tektopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Tektopia.
Ruslands præsident Putin har udtalt, at en nation med en førerposition inden for kunstig intelligens vil regere verden. Og han er ikke alene med den slags tanker. USA, Kina og Frankrig smider meget store milliardbeløb efter forskning i og udvikling af AI. For nylig løftede Israel så sløret for en ambitiøs national strategi for kunstig intelligens. Israelerne har til hensigt at tage en global førerposition inden for feltet, ligesom de igennem det seneste årti har gjort det på cybersikkerhed. Og det er der også de samme to mænd, der stod bag cybersikkerhedsstrategien, som nu har formuleret AI-strategien. Jeg talte med en af dem tidligere i år, professor Eviata Matanya fra Universitetet i Tel Aviv, og ham kan du møde senere her i podcasten. Der er mere end 1000 aktive AI-startups i Israel. I 2018 blev der investeret over 65 milliarder kroner i israelske AI-startups. Det er en stigning på mere end 400% på 5 år. Der er i dag over 4000 AI-specialister i israelske virksomheder, og antallet forventes at være tredoblet i 2022. Flere end 15 multinationale virksomheder har forsknings- og udviklingsafdelinger dedikeret til AI i Israel. Og der er penge i skidtet. I 2017 der blev den israelske startup-virksomhed MobileEye solgt til den amerikanske chipproducent Intel for ikke færre end 100 milliarder danske kroner. Det er fortsat det største AI-startup-salg i verden. MobileEye bruger kunstig intelligens til at lave billedgenkendelse, der er en central teknologi i udviklingen af selvkørende biler. Og måske så kan vi faktisk lære noget af Israel. Innovation Center Danmark i Tel Aviv har netop kortlagt AI-branchen i Israel, og den viser en nation, som for længe siden har forstået potentialet i kunstig intelligens. Jeg har besøgt manden bag rapporten.
Artificial intelligence is a tough topic to be researching and to be reporting on, because it touches almost every vertical and every technology and every industry by now. And I think this is also very true of the Israeli ecosystem. So whatever numbers you find, whatever deal sizes you find, you could equally put a company that's very successful in one vertical into another vertical. And that creates the challenge of doing the doing proper reporting and sending messages back. Irrespective of that, having said that, I think it's fascinating and without parallel to my knowledge of what's happening in this country in terms of artificial intelligence. Meaning that in every industry that you look, whether we're talking about automotive technologies, whether we're talking about cybersecurity, whether we're talking about even food and agricultural technologies, and several other industries, you can find groundbreaking companies, researchers, individuals here in Israel that are competing and working on a global level. And I think that's what, and you see the, you see also for the people who are working in those industries, they move around between industries. So at the end of the day, if you're doing artificial intelligence for self-driving cars, or you're doing artificial intelligence for drones that are looking to understand the ecosystem and the fields of a farmer, on a technical, purely technical level, there's many differences, but there's also many similarities. So you find that this ecosystem is very flexible. In terms of pure numbers, we found about 12,500 professionals, if I'm not mistaken from the report, that are working exclusively on this field. And these are technical professionals. So we're not talking about the tens of thousands of more that work in support functions or that drive business activity or similar. This is purely the technical human capital. And they work in different areas. So they work in companies, they work in academia, they work in corporates. and they drive this part of the Israeli industry on the technical side. But you also find serial entrepreneurs who are just using AI as a tool. And so you find companies that have raised hundreds of millions of dollars who the founders are not necessarily, or one of them at least, is not necessarily technical, but he understood the business value of the artificial intelligence within his business idea. And so he's bringing that to the customers. And so I think it's, at the end of the day, it's problem driven. And these problems tend to be global scale problems that people here are trying to solve in a variety of industries. To give you some other numbers, I think you can find several dozen at least Israeli or multinationals working in Israel with AI and AI-related activity, from Apple to Ford to Samsung. They're all working on these topics here in Israel. So I think those are some of the things that are really exciting, and combined with academia that's long been known to be at least at the forefront within artificial intelligence, it creates sort of a perfect storm.
You mentioned in the report that you have around 1,000 startups in Israel, and mainly in the Tel Aviv area where we are sitting right now, which are in the AI field. Why is that so? I mean, why is this such a great place for starting doing a startup within artificial intelligence?
So I think within artificial intelligence, it's a little bit a misconception to me at least, to think of it as the driving force. Of course, you have to know artificial intelligence to be solving a business problem, but if you don't have a business problem that you're looking to solve, whether through academia or in as a startup company or as a corporate, then all the technology in the world, I think, won't help you. And I think when you look at the number of companies and where they're being, how much money is being invested in them, which is in the hundreds and billions of dollars every year, you find that the outliers have a really, really big business problem that they're solving, or at least trying to solve. And you find that they're putting the human capital, the financial capital, and the people to work to solve these business problems. And when we think about 1,000 companies in artificial intelligence, it's not just the number. It's that there's maybe 100 companies in automotive technology solving important problems for that industry, which has nothing to do necessarily on the business problem with the kinds of problems that they're solving in agricultural technologies and the suggestions or the business problems I mentioned earlier. Again, when you talk about cybersecurity, you find that Israel has been leading quite heavily in terms of companies being created and in terms of things that they're doing, which again is a completely separate industry. So you have basically global demand on several major industries from around the world coming to Israel saying, hey, can you help us with this? Or sometimes Israeli entrepreneurs maybe picking it up a slight notch for earlier, but also having the support from venture capitalists and from their global networks to be able to execute on these kinds of business problems. And so I think that creates this major majority in the ecosystem. And of course you have entrepreneurs who do it their first time, but they're being inspired by people who just sold a $1 billion company, who happen to be just around when at some simple meetup, and who help them out in a major way, even though they might not have to, but they want to.
Vi forlader Samuel Scheer på den danske ambassade for at tage et smut lidt nordpå til Tel Aviv Universitetet. Her sidder den ene af de to mænd, der står bag Israels nationale AI-strategi. Han hedder professor Eviata Matanya.
Ben Israel and I came to the prime minister in the beginning of 2018, telling him that from strategic point of view, when you look around and you understand what's happening around the world, there is a global race for cyber digital supremacy. As I told you before, the cyber phenomenon based on cyberspace, from our point of view, is post-industrial era. Meaning we live in the cyber era where everything is connected. Every corner on earth, every human is connected. And we have a huge computing capacity. And this gives us the possibility to use AI algorithms based on data. And so on one hand, we have an opportunity for our economy and society through AI, big data technologies. On the other hand, we have the cyber threat and cyber power and cyber security. So we see around the world a double race for cyber digital supremacy. At first, Israel built its the first wing to match the cyber threat and to deal with it. But now we should also build our capacity to be also a power in AI, a global power in AI. So the Prime Minister accepted our recommendation and requested us to have to work for a year and to build a team to recommend to the government, the same as we did with cyber, to have an initiative, but not the cyber initiative, but the AI initiative. We call it the smart system initiative of what should be the national plan for Israel to also be an AI or smart system power in parallel to being a global cyber power. This is what we are doing for more than a year. In 2 to 3 months, we are going to recommend to the government on the national plan that should be adopted by the government.
Sometimes people talk about a global AI race, which is led by the US and China, and then they discuss who is number three and who is number four, if there is any number three or number four. Do you consider Israel to be a contender to be the win the third place in this AI race?
So usually I do not count it the way you counted it. I do agree that US and China are the leaders. And following them, I don't count number three or four, but I call it the second layer. And our objective is to be in the second layer. I think we are currently there, but we need a national plan in order to stay there and to be stronger. If you look around, for example, the investments in AI startups around the world, US is the first, then China, then European Union as a whole, not one of the states, and fourth is Israel. It shows you that also today, in the second layer after US and China, behind US and China, Israel center, together with, for example, United Kingdom. So, and it's the same as in the cyber military power. So this is our objective. We are there with our industry. We want to be there globally, playing, you know, to be part of the game of also the AI.
How would you, when you talk about a second layer, how would you define the second layer compared to the first layer? What is the difference?
First layer is being an AI superpower in every field of AI, in each and every technology, with industry, with infrastructure, with computing power, quantum computing, which from my point of view, again, is part of the smart system, the computing capacity, and data science, and IoT, everything. Second layer is to be a power, but not across all the fields, but only in several of the technologies, only in certain fields. Small countries to medium countries, such as Israel, or even the UK, which is much larger than Israel, cannot be in the place where they have enough budgets and efforts to be everywhere in this field. So one of our missions is to choose where to be. And the mandate that we received is to say where Israel has global advantages and to focus our efforts exactly to these fields in which we have a global advantage, and then we can be part of the second layer. It is no way that we'll be able to compete with the superpowers. We do not have nor the budget, nor the effort, nor the human capital, nothing. No, we, nor even a medium country such as the United Kingdom or others.
So what will be the strongholds within AI for Israel?
I don't know yet, but I believe that the field that we will be expert in and the way we're going to measure it, for example, we have, usually Israel is very good when to combine hardware and software. In very good when it comes to specific expertise. I will give you an example, distributed intelligence. Distributed intelligence is a new technology that you have, the network has intelligence, meaning more than all or every endpoint. If you, for example, take 1,000 robots, you have intelligence not that is more than each and every robot, but not centralized into one place. This is, for example, a new technology where Israel can be very strong in. We have the basis for this, and we will measure our success according to our ability to have a lot of solutions, products, and export in this field.
Men hvad kan Danmark lære i Israel, når det handler om kunstig intelligens? Samuel Scher har et bud.
So first of all, I have to say, and through the last 2 years, I've written a number of reports for different governments and similar. And the first impulse is always to say, what can we learn? And the first impulse is always to say, the things are better elsewhere. That's sort of what, in a position like myself, where you have to look outwards, that's the first feeling you get. But I think that the real value comes in when you look, okay, you do that for some time, and then you take a pause, you look very carefully at your own ecosystem, in our case, Denmark, and you understand where is that ecosystem at, because you can't jumpstart. It's like you're building a family, you can't start with the end goal in mind. You have to first find a girlfriend, and then you have to build a home together, and then you maybe have kids together, and maybe you go on to have a lovely life. And I think the same can be said about ecosystems. You cannot jumpstart them all the way. You can do things to shortcut, but unless you understand your own ecosystem very carefully and you've studied the patterns, the methods, the instruments, the culture, I think a lot of the relevant things that people maybe that work for Israel won't grasp, won't be able to be implemented. There will be challenges. There will be, it might sound like a great press release, and then in the end, after a year or two, you can't find the effects, even though you tried and you had the best intentions. So I think in terms of what can Denmark learn from Israel, it's first looking outward, understanding what's the potential even, and then looking very carefully inward. What is it? Where are we? What are we trying to do? Where do we want to be as a country, as a company, as a university in 5 or 10 years, given where the rest of the world maybe is moving and where we want to be ourselves based on our values and what we think is right? And so in that sense, what can Denmark learn from Israel? Having said that, and with that precursor, I think there's a number of areas that are incredibly exciting to be active in. We just had a few weeks ago the Industrial Foundation here in Israel with us, the management team, working on topics related to cybersecurity. We have heard from the Israeli partners that they don't see any reason why Denmark couldn't be one of the hubs globally for cybersecurity, both on the startup scale, but also in helping Israeli companies be basically becoming a jumping board to the rest of Europe through the multinational workforce that you have in Denmark, through the ease of collaboration between Israeli and Danish cultures. For a number of reasons, this sounds, at least on first sight, it sounds like an interesting idea. The same could be said in healthcare and related to artificial intelligence. Israeli universities and medical hospitals have sort of taken the lead globally to some degree on being some of the most innovative hospitals globally, but they also have innovation centers within the hospitals, and they've actually found a way to make that work for the staff, for the doctors, but also make it worthwhile for the university and for the hospital. So that's really interesting and really exciting. And so we're working with hospitals in Denmark and hospital groups and similar to understand how do the Israelis do it, what it is exactly that we want to bring back to Denmark? Is there transferability in the lessons? Is there transferability in the culture? And what would the Danish solution have to look like? Maybe with an Israeli partner, maybe without, to create that kind of economic benefit at the end of the day in Denmark. And I could just give you more and more example, but I think the idea being that you think carefully about where you want to go. You go out, and sometimes Israel is the solution. Sometimes other places can be part of and are very much part of the solution. And then you look back and you find sort of where is that grip, where is that overlap that really creates that mutual value and that creates a bigger cake for everyone at the end of the day.
Professor Matanya er heller ikke i tvivl. Alle lande bør have en AI-strategi.
I think that all countries should understand that we live in the beginning of the post-industrialist era, meaning the cyber era, and we need a comprehensive strategy of how to approach it. And a comprehensive strategy should be should suit the needs, the culture, and the interest of each and every country. And Denmark, as other countries, should understand where it is strong, where the strengths are, where the opportunities, the weaknesses, what is important, what is less important, and how to build a strategy that suits the needs and the interests of Denmark, the same as other nations. Not doing so is to let others decide for you, is to let the technologists and the international and other nations to decide for you. So you should have a strategy that you choose and you decide which strategy according to what you need and your interests are.
En del af hans succesfulde strategi handler også om øget fokus på uddannelse i kunstig intelligens. Det har Samuel Scher også kigget på.
I think basically the AI strategy, the way that I understand it and the way that the conversations with some of the people who created it, it is almost a continuation and an improvement based on the cybersecurity strategy that Israel launched about 10 years ago. So a lot of lessons learned, a lot of sort of a country taking initiative is not always easy. Getting companies and stakeholders and venture capitalists and academia into one boat is not a smooth ride. I can tell you that. And so there's been a lot of things that they've learned. But I think if I had to, at least from an observer's point of view, understand what's happening, it's that the Council of Higher Education, which is responsible for the budgets for the universities, in collaboration with other ministries and with the academia and industry, has put a very big focus on AI and artificial intelligence at universities and within higher education, and to some degree also within high schools and excellence programs and things like that. So I think it's really interesting because they basically mandate the universities to come up with ideas for how their AI center could look like, and they don't really tell them too much about what it is that they should be doing there in terms of research, but they say, well, if you want to be a globally competitive university, which is the ambition of the Israeli, of many of the Israeli universities, this is one area where you could prove your excellence. And they're incentivizing that kind of behavior. They're incentivizing with rather smart instruments and quite a lot of money, these kinds of programs. And I think that creates, again, this collaboration. It also has a lot to do with academia going out with industry or with high net worth donors or others looking to be even more, to use the government in money as maybe an impulse, but to go to take it one, two, three notches upwards. So when you look at a university like Tel Aviv University, they suddenly have the Yandex Center for Machine Learning. And that's a Russian corporate, former startup, doing things with an Israeli university. And of course, you have to think about the implications in terms of morality and ethics and what it is exactly that you're researching and who are you researching for. But it also means a major influx of money, a major influx of interesting problems to solve into the university. And the same you could say about the Weizmann Institute of Science, that is more in historically maybe in drug development, in biologics, in natural sciences. But they created an AI center, and they have now $100 million AI initiative. And things are happening. Maybe, and it's related to computational genetics. It's related to modeling of proteins. It's related to the things that Weizmann Institute has been good at and excellent at for a number of years. And now they're just, you know, going even deeper, even further, even more ambitious. And I think that's what you're seeing. In the same could be said about Ben-Gurion University and cybersecurity there. You have suddenly Deutsche Telekom, Jerusalem Venture Partners, a lot of international, Lockheed Martin, and others playing in that field within the Ben-Gurion University, working on cybersecurity. Or Intel has done, I think, $100 million+ investment and commitment to the university, to Technion and the Haifa ecosystem. So a lot of interesting things happening, quite big, I would say, from my humble perspective, and very much this like sort of trying to move the needle for everyone while long-term benefiting what's happening here.
And could you briefly describe the Israeli innovation system when it comes to technology?
Sure. So I think that basically the Israeli innovation ecosystem, I moved here 4 years ago, and I moved here from Switzerland, which I think has a lot of parallels to Denmark when you think about it in terms of the ecosystem that's been created and the traction within startups and the corporates that are around and the innovation funding and all these things. And if I had to make a few sort of inferences around where the Israeli ecosystem differs, and that's, I think, at the end of the day, how you really get the meat on the bone, I would say that, for example, the Israeli Innovation Authority is able and willing to invest in private companies. So they understand that startups are different from corporates and that you give different incentives to the various players, but that you have to do an active role and take an active role in order to reap the benefits in the long term in terms of a healthy, at least startup and high-tech economy. Another example would be where you see the differences that, and to put it in perspective, in Denmark, we would say that all companies are created equal. So you can't necessarily do investing in one and not giving the other one the benefit. And so there are some challenges in this, how we perceive what public funding should be doing and could be doing, which the Israelis have a different perception of. I think in terms of the ecosystem itself, I mean, you have about 6,500 startups that are working here. Of course, many fail, but a lot of them are still very interesting and relevant on a global scale. In terms of the multinationals, you have about 300, 350 multinationals with different levels of activity, from huge R&D centers with several thousand employees all the way to simple small setups of venture scouting and being sort of with boots on the ground. You have the investors. So Israel is the number one nation in terms of VC capita per capita. So you actually have a lot of capital that's looking to invest specifically in Israel and sometimes beyond. So we even see Israeli investors going out to Sweden and to other places and making investments that just because they see an opportunity that maybe the local investors are not seeing and that they have the background in the capital to be able to do those within the verticals that they perceive relevant. And I think those are some of the components. And of course, academia and the military and other things also play major roles in making that ecosystem sort of thriving. But it's important to say that Israelis are also great at telling their story from their point of view and what's attractive to the rest of the world. So I wouldn't say that Israel is the perfect example of a startup economy overall, but in what they do in that area, it's very, very professional, I would say.
Og det var altså Samuel Scheer for Innovation Center Denmark, vi hørte her, og jeg linker til hans rapport for tektopia.dk. Tektopia holder en lille smule juleferie, men når vi vender tilbage efter nytår, så kigger vi på, hvordan kunstig intelligens er medvirkende til, at Israel nu er en frontløber på transportteknologi, selvom landet overhovedet ikke producerer biler. Og når vi nu taler om kunstig intelligens, så skal du huske på, at Tektopia-podcasten her har en tvilling, nemlig Tektopia Radio 4 på Radio 4, der sendes hver søndag kl. 13:05. Den findes også som podcast på alle de platforme, hvor man normalt henter sin podcast. Og der kan du faktisk finde et afsnit, der hedder Robotter fatter ikke mennesker, og det handler om robotter og kunstig intelligens. Det er nemlig sådan, at robotter de faktisk savner social intelligens. Og det har jeg talt med Thomas Bolander, professor i kunstig intelligens på DTU om, og han bliver suppleret af Brian Due, der er lektor på Københavns Universitet og også beskæftiger sig med kunstig intelligens. Du har lyttet til Techtopia. Du kan finde flere oplysninger på techtopia.dk. Du kan følge os på Twitter, @techtopia.dk. Vi har også fået en Instagram-konto, der som også hedder techtopia.dk. Og så kan du deltage i en livlig diskussion om teknologi på Techtopia Backstage på Facebook. Det er en gruppe på Facebook. Og så kan du selvfølgelig altid sende mig en e-mail på henrik@techtopia.dk. Tak for denne gang og på genhør i det nye år. Techtopia er en podcast om mennesker og deres teknologi. Den er udgivet af Ingeniørforeningen IDA i samarbejde med Teknologiens Mediehus, HI-messen, Index Award, Innovation Center Danmark og IDA Forsikring. Mit navn er Henrik Føns, og det er mig, der bestemmer i Techtopia.